You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll take a look at the best books of 2016 with the editorial director of books for The New York Times.
Right now, there have been a lot of changes in farming in recent decades and major changes in the size of farm operations. According to U.S. data, there's been an increase in the very largest scale farms and a drop in mid-sized operations. But contrary to predictions, really small farms seem to be sticking around in high numbers.
Our next guest says that's not quite right, though, because the data counts a lot of properties as farms that aren't really farms the way most of us would think of them. And she says that may skew federal funding priorities.
Maggie Kurth-Baker joins us. She's a senior science writer for 538.com. Maggie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, on the surface, before we correct some of this data, what does it look like has happened with farms over the last couple of decades?
Well, there's definitely been consolidation of farms. So one of the major trends that has happened is that you kind of have this squeezing in the middle where you've gotten a lot more big farms as farms kind of have smushed together into larger entities. And you've ended up with a lot of smaller farms, but the kind of mid-sized farms, particularly of the sort that I think like a lot of people who aren't familiar with farming imagine when they think of farming, those have shrunk. The number of those have shrunk.
But there were predictions that the overall number of farms would decline, and based on the data as it's currently collected, that doesn't seem to have happened.
Right, yeah. So I was looking at I was reading a book, actually, by Osha Gray Davidson called Broken Heartland that was written in the 1980s. And in that book, he had what was then contemporary prediction that the number of farms was going to drop by half by the year 2000. And I got curious about whether that had actually happened. And when I went and looked, it hadn't. The number of farms has stayed fairly stable since about 1989. And I started trying to kind of dig into that to sort of understand, at first wondering why the research had made a wrong prediction, and then later kind of trying to understand how their prediction that the number of farms was going to decrease or that farms were going to consolidate had turned out to be correct, but that the overall number of farms hadn't actually fallen, even though the consolidation they predicted had happened.
And that's where you started to get into almost a metaphysical question in a way. What is a farm? And some of these farms at the smaller end are maybe not what a lot of people would think of as a farm. Can you talk about what is going on there and how we measure it that may have thrown this off?
Right. So, you know, you don't really think about it much, but when you are doing a count of farms, you're doing a census, you have to have like some sort of definition of what constitutes a farm. Part of the definition that we use for the Census of Agriculture measures the value of what is on that property. So that can be like livestock, or it could be farm equipment, or it could be produce that could be sold. And it's measured as $1,000 worth of value, not in terms of $1,000 in sales, but $1,000 of something that could be sold. And $1,000 isn't very much. That was a level that was set in the 1970s, and it hasn't been adjusted for inflation. And because it doesn't have to do with actual sales, that means that you can have, you know, somebody can own a few horses, or they could own a tractor, and all of a sudden you count as a farm, even if you're not actually working as a farm. So that ends up incorporating a lot of things that I think most people would really more likely identify as, you know, kind of hobby farms or as large suburban plots that happen to have a horse on them.
Right, or if I went out and decided, hey, I'm going to buy land, I'm going to plow up half an acre of it. If I were a better gardener, I could probably come up with $1,000 worth of hypothetical stuff there, and I would count as a farmer all of a sudden.
Right, yeah, because it's not a very high bar to clear.
Do we have a sense of how many of these things that, as you say, might be hobby farms or large lots with a couple horses, how many of those there are that are throwing off what we think of as our number of farms in this country?
So this is something that experts told me is actually one of the problems, that we don't know in real detail how many of those small farms are actual farms, how many of those small farms are, you know, somebody's hobby farm that is maybe selling some stuff but not much, and how many of those things are, you know, effectively the yards of the upper middle class.
We're talking to Maggie Kurth Baker about a piece she wrote on farms in the United States. Looks like the number of farms isn't going down, but only because the numbers might be a bit skewed. A lot of things that aren't really farms are being counted as farms. Maggie, it seems like an easy solution, and you write about this, would be to say, hey, let's take that $1,000 threshold and bump it up, maybe $5,000. That's a place where we could call something a farm. Why hasn't this easy solution been implemented?
Nobody knows exactly why the easy solution hasn't been implemented. You know, I couldn't get a really solid answer on that. It's something that has been studied by people within the USDA, particularly the Economic Research Service Department has published papers on that. And a lot of it comes down, though, to the fact that however you change that definition, there's no perfect definition. You know, however you do it, some things are going to get left out that shouldn't be. Some things are going to be included that shouldn't be. And the result is likely to be people that are unhappy. And those people that are unhappy have congressmen. And those congressmen do not necessarily have an incentive to approve a new definition, while they have an incentive to just not do anything. The definition has to be approved by Congress.
So why does it matter if we don't have accurate statistics on the number of farms? What do we lose if we don't have, if not a perfect measurement, a better measurement than we're currently using?
Well, it affects some of the way that certain kinds of money to agriculture is distributed. So some of the research dollars for land-grant universities and certain kinds of farm benefit programs are distributed based on the number of farms in that state or in that district. And in that case, you might have some places that don't actually have as many farms as they seem to, getting large amounts of money because they're being counted as having more farms. You know, there's one district in Texas that I looked at that the number of farms in that district would be cut by something like half if you change the definition.
There's a lot of gray area, it sounds like, at the low end of the spectrum. These smaller farms, are they farms, are they not? One trend that appears to be pretty solid that you write about is there's a perception that we're seeing more big consolidated farms. The numbers really do seem to bear that out, don't they?
Yeah, we are seeing a lot more larger farms. The one thing that turned out to be really interesting about that is that the vast majority of those, like higher than 95% of those, are still family farms. They're farms that are owned by and operated by people within a single family. They might be incorporated for tax purposes. You know, when I was a freelancer for 10 years, I was incorporated for tax purposes, but that didn't make me Monsanto, you know. So it's an interesting twist on, I think, what a lot of us, the perception that I think a lot of us have is that when you have one of these farms, it's like 1,000 acres or 2,000 acres, that that's likely to be something owned by a corporation, but that's not necessarily true.
Right, yeah, there's the perception, or there are these small to mid-sized family farms out there, and then there are these big CAFOs for livestock, or big multi-field, what used to be a whole bunch of different farms merged together, and that's often referred to as corporate agriculture. That could still be incorporated, though, but a family, it's pretty common, you say.
Yeah, it's extremely common. And there's a lot of gray area with this, though, too. I mean, I think that one of the takeaways is that there are certain farming practices that people, there are reasonable reasons to question, but that those farming practices often get talked about as corporate farming, and maybe that's not the right language to talk about them because they're being used by large farmers who are families as well as by corporations. And the way that farming works in the U.S., large farmers are more likely to be a family operation. You know, even if they are hiring people to work under them, even if they are an extended family, that's still a family. And, you know, the language that you use to talk about the problems matters.
Right. You know, looking at the census, the farm census numbers, as you have, kind of shakes up some assumptions that I and probably a lot of people have. What kind of maybe reporting would you like to see either you or some other people do that might help flesh out our picture of what is actually happening on farms in this country?
You know, I did not grow up on a farm, but my mom's family all farmed. And I think that, and still do farm, though I think they are sort of following the trends that a lot of farmers do, in that nobody in my family now farms exclusively. They have other jobs and kind of farm on the side, and partly that is an economic issue, and partly it is an issue of technology. You know, it's a lot easier now because of bigger tractors, because of tools that have come along, to work one job in construction and farm some land on the side. You no longer need to spend all your time doing the farming. But I think that there's a lot of that kind of nuance that doesn't really get into the media, in large part because a lot of the biggest voices in the media aren't coming from farm country. So I think that there are some interesting stories about what farming actually looks like that still need to be told. And I think that there are also some interesting stories that could be told about how farmers make environmental and economic decisions when they work. You know, I've had some interesting conversations with my uncle about the fact that, you know, he's somebody who loves fishing, he's somebody who loves the outdoors, and he is concerned about what we know about how pesticide runoff affects downstream waters. But he also is concerned about making sure that he can produce the quantity of corn that he has been producing, and making sure that he can, you know, meet his own economic goals, and that that requires pesticide use. So there are complicated decisions that people are making, and it's not, you know, it's not necessarily evil big ag versus us. It's individuals who have very difficult decisions to make and don't necessarily know the right decision to make in those circumstances.
We'll leave it there. Maggie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That was Maggie Kurth-Baker. Her piece on farming is linked at the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.